Good morning, friends. I hope that you're resting well and feeling ease, body and mind, settling, still arriving. We keep arriving in the heart, arriving in the body, arriving into presence. I'd like to just say a few words about how we are in this space and making the most of this gathering space of the meditation hall. It's a beautiful practice space. It's really such a pleasure and a privilege to have this space to gather. And so I'd like to invite you to make a practice of how we are and how we gather, you know, you are already, so I'm just kind of shining a spotlight on it to make it even more present in our awareness, to enter into the space with mindfulness and care and a kind of, you know, even a reverence, if you relate to that word, if that word resonates with you, a respect is another way of saying it, for what we do here, which is holy, which is sacred. It's and it's beautiful, and it's a gift to the world. So as you enter in, I invite you to pause. And then enter gently. Let your energy be gentle as you come into the space. Even if you are coming in, you know, just under the wire and everybody's here and you're the last one in, still bring a quality of gentleness, sensitivity, and respect as you come in kindly. And we can also bring that with us as we enter out into the sacred space beyond these walls. Remembering that instruction from Thich Nhat Hanh, with each step I kiss the earth. And it is, I'm very touched by the beauty of this place and the care with which it has been developed. Practicing that quality of sensitivity and awareness of the space around us and bringing that with us as we move out as well. Today, I'd like to talk for the instruction time we have about working with what are called the hindrances and also by extension, other afflictive emotions. So there are five hindrances. And these hindrances are named that. I always kind of wondered why they called hindrances, because even from the beginning of the of my practice, I recognized that they were opportunities, that these are opportunities to awaken in the midst of what causes our suffering. So they're called hindrances because they hinder the mind becoming collected and calm. So they hinder that, but they are doorways. They are opportunities for us to see through the causes, the patterns of our suffering. When we are caught in greed or grasping or anger, or the mind is sluggish, or the mind becomes rigid and fixated on something, a belief, a preference, an idea that things ought to be a certain way. So these are what I just described are sense desire, aversion, and ignorance. And the form that ignorance takes in meditation practice is sloth and torpor. The mind becomes sluggish and heavy and kind of clouded. So these are these are patterns of suffering, and the work. The sacred work in monastic Christian monastic practice, it's called the work, the work that we do to see into these and to see and to let them go, to unhook the mind from being caught up in them, is a work that is a gift to the world. We tend to see when we're caught in these patterns, we tend to become to feel very isolated. When we want something, and you know it's we can't have it, or we don't want something and we want to get rid of it and we can't, whether it's a thought or a condition or. And we're caught in aversion, we feel very isolated and separate and alone. These afflictive emotions have that effect because they're all part of how we construct a sense of self that is separate from the world, separate from the rest of life. And so as we liberate ourselves, as we allow the Dharma, the medicine of the Dharma, to free us by letting go, by seeing through, by unhooking the mind. This is a healing thing to do for the world. And enables us to engage in the world in a more more loving and compassionate way. I don't see this practice as something that's just personal. I mean, it is personal, and it's also very connected to all of life. And there's a natural movement that as we become less caught up in ourselves and in our own wants and preferences and compulsions and obsessions, You know, as we become freer of those, we are more open, open-hearted, and open-handed to with the world. It's difficult work, and it's hard to see what's coming up in the mind. And here we are, we're on the third day of retreat, where approaching kind of the halfway point of the retreat. And we have enough distance at this point in time from our lives, from the busyness of our lives, and maybe the mind is quieting down a little bit and letting go. And some of these underlying energies are becoming more apparent to us. They're coming into view in our meditation practice. And I know that we have a whole range of experience here. So you know, some of you have practiced with this, and you know it very well. And others, for others of you, this is new. So when I speak and when I give instruction and how we shape the retreat, it's kind of aiming to include everyone and also to give something to those who are have been down this path many times on many retreats. So grief may be coming up, anger may be coming up, resentment may be coming up, self-doubt. So I named three of the hindrances, sense, desire, aversion, sloth and torpor is what is the third one is called. And then restlessness and remorse and doubt, skeptical doubt, is the fifth. So when these come up, it is difficult. It's painful to see, because we want to think of ourselves, and we do think of ourselves as good, well-intentioned, and skillful people, and we are. I mean, we wouldn't be here if we weren't. So, and you know, as I have said on at least a couple of occasions already, we carry the world within us. We carry the whole world within us. And so in many ways, consciously and unconsciously, we have been conditioned to the greed, hatred, delusions, and other kinds of unskillful beliefs and attitudes of the world around us. So it's important not to have self-judgment around these. And yet it is painful. It's painful to feel them. It's painful to recognize them. But there's an expression in Buddhism that it's the suffering that leads to the end of suffering, to actually turn toward these patterns in the mind that are also held in the body. It's the suffering that leads to the end of suffering. In his book, My Grandmother's Hands by Resmaa Menakem, he also talks about this in a slightly different way. And he talks about clean pain and dirty pain. And this is the work, which is similar work to this, of recognizing internalized racist attitudes. And he talks about this, you know, to all people. We all have, no matter what the color of our skin, we all have internalized racist attitudes. But the work, because the way that we've received them is different depending on who we are and how we have been racialized, the work is somewhat different. But it's all work. It's clean pain or dirty pain. The dirty pain is when we're driven by it, when we're unconscious of it, we're caught up in it, and it's still painful. Whereas the clean pain is when we turn toward it and we face it and we recognize, oh yeah, you know, I saw my inner reactivity in that situation. And, you know, whatever arose, whatever perception or label or aversion arose, I see it and I release it. So I remember very much my attitude toward, you know, and I can remember this from my first retreat that I did, my first Vipassana retreat that I did. And as I began to see these patterns of the mind, and it was like, I slammed the door. It was like I slammed the door shut. I didn't want to see it. I thought that was the way to deal with it, to keep it out, you know, which is the opposite of the guest house imagery. But really it is to open the door. And so as we open the door, we are recognizing that this is not me, not mine. We're allowing the mind to turn toward the experience, not be at the effect of it. And so that in that moment itself is a liberating moment. And in that moment, we can recognize, this is dukkha. This is dukkha. This is suffering. So that's the beginning of the path. That's the first of the Four Noble Truths, to recognize, to understand, this is suffering. So those are the general instructions about the five hindrances and, you know, any afflictive emotion. We don't have to kind of, when we feel something arising, it can be helpful to name it, but we don't have to slotted into a one of the five hindrances. You know, it could be jealousy, it could be pride, it could be a feeling of abandonment, you know, which do have different flavors of wanting and aversion and so on. But the important thing is to recognize it as suffering. So I'll just go through them, the five, to just talk about a little bit what the flavor of each one is. So sometimes people get caught up in fantasy, sense desire fantasy. And it doesn't seem like suffering. It feels pleasant. But it is living in a dream when we are kind of really lost in fantasy a lot of the time. A very simple experience, again, one of my, the imprints that we have from our early retreats, very, very strong learning experiences, toward the end of a very calm and collected sitting that I had experienced a lot of peace, and then just the desire arose as I kind of knew that the sitting was coming to the end, but the bell had not yet rung, and the thought of going and getting a cup of tea arose in my mind, and then immediately I got hooked by thinking about what kind of tea and would I put honey in it and I was just kind of leaning toward, in my mind, leaning toward that cup of tea, and I was no longer present in the moment. And then, the mindfulness of that energy was liberating, and I felt the pain, I felt the discomfort. Wasn't extreme, but it was just for a cup of tea, but it was very enlightening to see, oh, okay, that's sense desire. And so we do this kind of leaning toward experiences, reaching, subtly or very powerfully, very powerful urges and wants can be driving us. And when we're caught up in the whole project of trying to obtain or attain what we want, we're so driven by it that we don't realize how much suffering there is in it. And so turning toward it and releasing that and looking, observing, knowing in the body, this is wanting, this is grasping. And letting that energy be known, that feeds the wisdom quality that we all have. Because when we're at the effect of some afflictive emotion, we are not listening. We're not attuned. We're driven. But when we let go, we feel into, oh, what is that that I'm caught up in? And the wisdom quality of our being says, this is suffering. We don't need this. We don't want this. And so, because we don't want to suffer. I mean, that's very innate in our nature and in all beings. No being wants to suffer. So I invite you to explore that, in your practice, in your sitting practice, in your opportunities when, we're going for meals. I remember my first, becoming aware of how driven my mind was around food and meals when I was on retreat, early retreats. Because in my home there had been a lot of dysfunction around food, and so I took that. I took that in as a child, and I was still carrying it, and so becoming conscious of it in my practice, I would notice that my mind was racing as I was approaching the dining hall, and I wasn't even aware of really what I was thinking, but the mind was just so caught up, and then I would sit down and eat, and I wasn't even that aware that I was eating, that my food somehow then was gone, and so just learning to slow down, breathe, engage the senses in a mindful way, in an appreciative way, in a way that honors our interconnectedness with life, that the food is nourishing this body. And turning toward the senses, turning toward the hindrance, turning toward the pain, the suffering, this is the engagement of right effort. So that is one of the path factors on the Eightfold Path, also part of the Four Noble Truths. Right effort is to bring the awareness and engage. This is how I'm caught up, and it takes. So it's mindfulness. It's investigation. It's looking. Taking interest, being caring and curious about what's happening, what is unfolding within my being, and then bringing energy to engage the teachings and relinquish that grasping or that aversion. And then we notice, so this is an opportunity for insight. And what I'm saying about grasping applies to all of these hindrances. We notice the impermanent nature of it. So when, that's key, that noticing the impermanent nature of it, it's like, oh, when I don't feed it by thinking about that cup of tea or thinking about how hungry I am, and is there going to be enough food, and will I like it, and so on. By just letting all that narrative and drama go, and just coming to the body and noticing those energies, giving space, kind, compassionate space, for them to be known, received, and relinquished, that then we deeply learn, we see into the vipassana, the insight, the seeing deeply is the translation of vipassana, or knowing deeply. We know in our bones the impermanent nature of experience. And we recognize that we may not have the power to control all the conditions of our lives, but we do have the capacity and the potential to respond, to take ownership, to allow wisdom and kindness to be operative in this being, That's where we do have our capacity to become the word master is coming into mind, but there's a certain flavor that I don't like about that word, but it is a it's a quality of being our best self. It's a quality of integrity that we can step into and be the person that we wish to be. And some reflection on aversion. So with aversion, it's not wanting something. It's wanting something not to happen or not to be there or not to have happened, or wanting somebody not to be in that way that we don't like. Whatever the aversion is that we get caught up in. And it's a pushing away of experience. And our reaction may be to literally push away, or it may be to turn away, to disconnect, to distract ourselves. So addictive behavior can come from wanting to escape from the pain of memories, thoughts, and feelings about ourselves or feelings about our life that are too painful to bear, or we feel are too painful to bear. So again, the work is to turn toward, and in all of these, the quality of love, the quality of compassion, is so important. To have compassion for ourselves, to have compassion for the other. Aversion is the most painful of the afflictive emotions. So there really is a kind of standing in the fire of those feelings. We may be holding resentment about something that happened to us. We may be holding trauma. We may be holding trauma in the body. And it's so important to get support from caring people, from caring caregivers, professionals, or friends, or family members who can help us to touch into the pain that we're holding and find ways to release it. And with trauma, you know, nourishing the body is also so important. Nourishing the body with ways of just self-care. You know, whether that be movement or massage, or, you know, ways of being with the body that are kind and supportive. Music can be very healing to many people. Walking, just sitting in a beautiful spot when the heart is feeling a lot of hurt. You know, let the world hold you. And so briefly, sloth and torpor is sometimes called sinking mind. It can actually happen as our meditation develops and the mind becomes more concentrated. So the nervous energy of the mind, the agitated energy of the mind that kind of keeps us, you know, awake in a nervous way, diminishes the restlessness of the mind. And so the mind can be exhausted we don't yet know how to inhabit that new space that's freed up. And so the mind just kind of goes to sleep. So that's important, is to, you know, as we see the arising and passing away of the hindrance, whatever it may be, it's important to notice the space that is freed up, and to recognize that space is open and receptive, and we don't have to fill it with something. There can just be that quality of awareness. So with sloth and torpor, in meditation, we open our eyes, we bring more energy to the posture, lifting the spine. We might stand up. Those are very simple and kind of technical responses. In our lives, kind of drifting off, zoning out, or holding to fixed views is a kind of ignorance and rigidity of the mind that, you know, it can't be that way, it has to be this way, that's wrong. Why? You know, maybe we can ask. Well, maybe that's not beneficial. But just because it's always been done that way, or, you know, doesn't mean that that's the only way. And I just recently read a quote. I don't remember who it was from, and I don't even remember it exactly. But it's something like, you know, a wrong idea that's embraced by millions of people is still a wrong idea. And so, so we can question, you know, our beliefs, the beliefs that have been inculcated in our mind, and become more flexible in how we think. It enables us to learn from other people, other ways of being. Restlessness and remorse are put together. This restlessness, it's a kind of agitation, jumping, monkey mind, jumping to this, jumping to that, this thought, that thought. It's very hard to sit still when we're caught in a restless energy. And so we want to give more space. So kind of trying to focus attention in a very narrow and precise way, like on the breath in a particular place in the body, is not helpful usually for restlessness. It's too tight a rein. We have to give a looser rein and just be aware of the space in the room. Be aware of sounds coming and going. Be aware of the energy, the restless energy in the body. Just invite it to settle. Just let it have its own time, its own space. You know, it's this Burn Buddhist teacher that I practice with sometimes in that tradition. The teacher said, let it be as it is. Just let it be as it is. That's true for so many things, you know. Just, it can be for our relationship with people too. Let so-and-so be who they are and not try to change them. And let our energy be as it is, and just give it space to be as it is. And it will settle when we don't kind of get caught up by it. And then skeptical doubt is continually doubting and doubting the teachings, do these apply to me? Maybe I should be practicing another practice. Maybe I should be doing this. Maybe I should be doing that. Is that really true, what she just said? And it's not that we shouldn't question, but do we have a stance of skepticism? Or do we have a stance of receptivity and openness and interest, curiosity? And maybe it is helpful and true and useful. So let's move from words to the engagement in practice of being with what is emerging, giving space, turning toward, bringing compassion and kindness always, and being curious in this unfolding discovery of how life is emerging, how wisdom is emerging, how compassion is emerging in this being.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.